לא נשכח תמיד להיות מאוחדים עם ישראל חי בעליות בירידות גם בשעות הכי קשות
Shalom everybody and welcome to the Yishai Fleischer Show broadcasting live from Judea to the world you're a part of it wherever you are Shalom and welcome to Malka Fleischer
Hello
Malka, great to have you on the show.
Thank you.
And, we have,
I have a little bit of a cold.
I'm sorry, you should have a refuah shlema.
There's a lot of people with colds. Some people got the rones,
there's
you know, corona.
Yeah, that's right.
But I feel okay.
You should have a refuah shlema among you and the many injured Israeli soldiers.
Right, this is like little.
Right now.
Like a little cold is actually makes you feel better because you're just like at least taking part in the suffering that some people are really dealing with.
Yeah, in the last day and a half, we lost 4 Israeli soldiers.
Right.
Even
that's a lot of people,
even
that's a lot of Jewish, sweet Jewish people.
Amit Segal, mm-hmm. who is Israel's like most famous
commentator,
like broke down crying during a broadcast because Yitzhar Hoffman mm-hmm. was his neighbor, and kind of knew he wasn't the same age.
Right, but they were neighbors.
But they knew each other. Okay. And this Yitzhar Hoffman was a commander in the elite Shaldag unit,
right.
which is an Air Force recon unit. And he was killed in northern Gaza yesterday, which is another question. Why are people getting killed in northern
Gaza?
Yeah,
why is that still happening?
And the commentators and people are saying that, and I think it's very logical and simple, which is you're letting the bad guys back in.
Right.
And when Israel doesn't have full and total control of these areas, Then they take over again, and that's part of the call that Israelis are making on our government to hold on to land and not to cede it back to the terrorists, and not to allow all of these beautiful fighters to have fallen for nothing.
See, it's funny because on the outside, you know, people talk about like militants and civilians and stuff. And while it's true that these people died as fighters in a war, like they're, I guess, if you want to address it very coldly and clinically, like they are legitimate targets in a war. Like the reality is that almost no one in Israel is a career soldier. Almost nobody. Almost all the people who are being killed are people who are doing obligatory draft or obligatory reserve duty. These are not people whose lives are about army service. These are people who are willing to put their lives aside to do the necessary army service. So it hurts because while they die as soldiers, in our hearts they die as civilians. You understand? They are our neighbors. They are our brothers. They are our friends, our guys who live next door, our guy that we do high-tech work with, our guy who's our accountant, our teacher.
Yuval Neer, who was killed yesterday, had 5 kids.
Terrible.
Okay, so that's
right
that's
here from Judea.
So that's 5. Right. That's 5 orphans.
So many orphans in this war.
It's crazy.
It really. I think about them a lot. I think about them a lot also because this is our son's bar mitzvah year.
Mm-hmm.
And he still has a while until his bar mitzvah, but he's gearing up. And I just think to myself, like, how many of these kids are not going to have their father at their bar mitzvah or at their wedding or even like at their like school Hanukkah party or to tuck them in? Or it's just.
And the least that we could do
so
is
hard.
Make their death count.
Right.
You know what I mean? And
right. Let them die as heroes.
So, you know, Israelis have been organizing. I'm on a WhatsApp group of an effort to organize the blockage of the sending of food and medicine to Gaza because it ends in the hands ends up in the hands of Hamas. And it's like our citizenry is organizing to block our country from feeding the enemies that we're fighting.
It up. Yep.
It's just like
it's a rough moment.
Yeah.
I mean it's not I can't say this is exactly unprecedented. Yeah. You know, we you and I, Aisha, were very active in the fight to stop the expulsion of Jews from Gush Katif. We basically were doing the same stuff.
Right. It's the same exact stuff. It's the same exact stuff because what we were saying back then, 17 years ago.
19.
2005.
19.
All right. 19, is it? Wow. Mm-hmm. Okay.
Yeah, I know. Time flies when you're having fun.
Okay.
Yeah.
So what we were saying 19 years ago, almost 20 years ago, was that this would eventually happen. That right. Hamas would take over. This would be a jihadist front base. You can look back in the archives. You can listen to our shows. That's what we were saying.
We should play some of that stuff. I wonder if we could find any of that.
I can. I have it all. It's definitely playable.
Now would be the time to be playing snippets of that stuff.
Yeah, for sure. Malka, I wanted to tell you that one of the things that I noticed during this war about the nature of this war is that one of the I'm always fascinated by war because war is so much more than the physical conflict. There are repercussions of war that are so many and huge, and everything. Right. And one of the things I noticed that this is also a war about stuff because Israel is also kind of rearming. We've realized where we are army And our government has not supplied us with enough stuff.
Right.
So everybody's getting
these. We had people from around the world sending in like emergency charter flights filled with stuff at the beginning of this war.
Right. And then stuff is still coming in. So I want to talk about two things about stuff that I'm a little bit involved in peripherally, and I want to just help people get connected to something. Another thing that this war is about, related to that, is the ability to connect through stuff. So as I'm doing the show with you, I'm looking right now at the table. I see your yarn.
Ah, my camo colored yarn.
You got camo color yarn. You've been making kippahs, tactical kippahs.
Right. I have a few that I got to still hand out.
Right. And you're making them. People love them. They really, really love them. So I want to mention three ways that people can connect through stuff.
Okay.
Three different ways. One, sponsor a Malka tactical kippah. You think it's funny, but we actually order this yarn. Malka sews it, weaves it,
right? I crochet it.
Okay,
is therapeutic for me. That's actually how I started because I was so tense.
Yeah.
At the beginning of this war, then I was just like, and then I was just like, what can I do? I'm like, hard drugs? No. Run away from home? No. Crochet, yes.
Crochet tactical kippahs.
Yes.
And I see many soldiers around here with Malka's tactical kippah. So go to Fight for Israel with the number 4, fightforisrael.org. And you could donate to a tactical Malka's tactical kippahs. 2, an amazingly funny thing has emerged in this war is that this is also the war of patches. People love patches. There's a lot of patches, patches of the units. And there's today.
It has like, it's Velcro. And basically the soldiers' uniforms have like the one side, like the hook side or whatever, or the fluffy side. They have the fluffy side of the Velcro on the shoulders. And then the people are selling and making all kinds of patches with the hook side of the Velcro. You just stick it on to your shoulder, and then people are wearing them as emblems that they want to carry around with them during the war.
That's right. And I have so many different patches. For example, my brother ordered me a patch that has a quote from the book of Joshua, you know, be strong and of good heart, that kind of thing. And then there's the Charavot Brazel, the Swords of Steel patches. Then there's the unit patches. But something that has become extremely...
Flag of Israel patch.
What has become very popular and people are very excited about is the temple patches and the Mashiach patches.
Beit HaMikdash patch.
Right. Beit HaMikdash, the third temple patches. Thank you, Malka. And the Mashiach patches. And soldiers get excited about that. So I'm going around. I was in a base. There was this concert by Yishai Rebo at a base. And there was this guy handing out to every soldier a Mashiach patch. And the soldiers were loving it. And this is his mitzvah. This is what he's doing
every
day.
That's so cool.
This is what he's doing. So then I started like searching into this. And my friend Josh Wander and a guy named Danny Seaman here in Efrat were like, yeah, we're ordering patches. We're making patches. And I'm like, yeah, give me patches. And I got patches. And it just started being a realization that like this is something that we can give our soldiers. But there's a narrative here. There's a narrative here, which is like, I wear a patch for a reason because that makes the war have a purpose. So if you go to fightforisrael.org, I think there's going to be, by the time you hear the show, a drop-down menu that's going to be called Holy Patches Project for soldiers, okay?
Cool. Yeah. So sponsoring patches for soldiers.
Patches for soldiers.
Can people purchase a patch for themselves?
Probably yes. Probably,
but for
yes,
now, we're starting with right the now, patches yeah, for soldiers. That's exactly. That's such a nice idea. And it's basically these two patches, the Mashiach patch and the Beit HaMikdash patch?
Yes. Yes. The Beit HaMikdash patch especially is the one that my friends are making.
That's so cool.
And that makes this temple, if you think about it, if this makes this war, what do the Arabs call this war? The jihadis, what do they call the war? The Al-Aqsa flood. It's all about Al-Aqsa. It's all about the Temple Mount.
Temple Mount war.
Right. So...
Right, it's either going to be an Al-Aqsa flood or a Beit HaMikdash, Simchat Beit HaShoeva.
Right, to fix what happened.
Right, to cleansing. There is going to be water on the Temple Mount, basically. Right. Whose water is it going to be?
That's cool. That's crazy pants, what you just said. That's cool. I didn't see that. That's neat. That's cool. That's powerful. Okay, so the Beit HaMikdash flood, right? Beit Simchat Beit HaShoeva.
Or Sponja Beit HaMikdash.
So that's also at fightforisrael.org. And finally, there are still a lot of people that don't have the tactical vests with the bulletproof plating.
Really?
Yes.
How is that possible?
Well, they're not necessarily just regular soldiers. Some of them are first response units. For example, here in Gush Etzion, mm-hmm. There's a beautiful town called Bat Ayin, mm-hmm. and they are building up the rapid response team, and they're still short, like 20 of these vests.
But we're not talking about fighters in Gaza right
now. No. Okay. But my good friend, but still important.
Yeah, it's very important. This is the home front. This is very important.
So my good friend Izzy Danziger from Mishmeret Yesha, he's a classic old timer. He's like been through the whole like Oslo war thing, and years ago, already in the 90s, began making, getting a sewing operation going, getting the best plates and the best vests, and really, and I wear one of the Moritz Yesha vests. Mm-hmm. I wear an old school one, but he's got a lot of new school ones.
Like those new styles.
The more advanced styles. And that also, you can sponsor a vest through Mishmeret Yesha, and I'm just going to be
That's a great idea.
Through Fight. Number four, mm-hmm. Israel.org.
I like that.
Israel.org. That's just a kind of a website that I created.
Do you know how much a vest costs?
I actually wanted to ask him this morning. I saw him in prayer. His are a tad more expensive than the ones that you could buy on Amazon and stuff
like that. Right, because it's like handmade.
And it's higher quality. It's more made for what we need exactly, and with the right pouches and with the right things and with the right plates.
It's like customized.
For example, mine, he gave me with the plating that also had a second thin layer of Kevlar behind the plate.
Wow.
Which when God forbid the bullet hits, it not only does it block, but it also spreads out the strike energy.
Oh, so it doesn't hurt.
So it doesn't break ribs and stuff
right.
like that.
Wow. Okay.
So it's a tad what more expensive than those vests. So all of that is through fightforisrael.org with the number four. I like that. I like that domain. Fightforisrael.org.
Yeah,
I like
that. That's awesome.
Yeah, I like that a lot.
So those are great. Okay, I hope people will check it out. And I hope people, I really, really want to thank the people who have been giving through Buy Me a Coffee.
Oh, buymeacoffee.com/Yishai. That's right.
Right. Those gifts are so helpful and we really appreciate it. And they're also very meaningful because we know how much it means, you know what I mean? To you go and you like go to the site and you put in your info and you give your money and you're not just giving money, you're making a statement and you're standing behind us and we could feel that. We really appreciate it.
That's right. And we got to be together in this time of war.
Right.
We got to be together.
I mean, this time of war, by the way, it's not just here. I know that people can feel it out there listening where they are. You know, you may not have bullets whizzing by, thank God. It should never happen, but there's a lot of threats out there. You know, I know America's dealing with its southern border situation. And I just saw that Cori Bush and Rashida Tlaib just voted against a bill that would prevent Hamas terrorists from coming into the United States. They voted against it. They're like, no, we want them.
What?
Just like you have people. I'm just saying there are people in the United States. Powerful people who are not working in the best interests of the American people. And I know Americans can feel that.
And that's true all over the world. Right. I mean, if you talk to
the UK, they're talking about recognizing a Palestine.
If you talk to some of my colleagues on the nationalist the nationalists politician in Europe,
yeah,
in Holland, mm-hmm, and in other countries, like, they are highly aware, in Hungary, they're highly aware of the jihadist threat, and they're also highly aware, and here's very interesting, they're also highly aware of the sister of that jihadist threat, which is progressivism,
mm-hmm,
which is also anti-Bible, anti-family, and pro-jihad.
Right.
So Western countries, parts within Western countries, or whatever it's called, I don't even know what that term means, but you know what I mean. Western countries, they recognize that there is this, what I call the progressive jihad axis. And they're against both of those, and that's why we stand together. We also have countries like India who are also against that in large part. Okay. We're talking a lot of smart stuff. I think that it's time to bring on somebody who I think is very special. Last night, I recorded live on my Facebook page and on Twitter and on also YouTube. I went live, and so I got a lot of comments and a lot of conversations. And my guest was Rabbi Stephen Przanski. So here's the segment from last night's live program. I think you're going to enjoy it. It's a lot of fun and interesting stuff. I also play some of the new videos that I've made along my journey in the last few weeks. So you're going to hear some of those. Also, by the way, our YouTube page is flying.
Yeah.
Yishai Fleischer TV is flying. And so I highly recommend that you check out Yishai Fleischer TV. Things are happening.
There's lots of good
YouTube
shorts also. I know that's like the thing these days, and you can forward them because people will watch them.
Okay, so here is my program, including the one and only Rabbi Stephen Przanski.
We are at day 117. That's right. It's been a long war for Israel. We continue to fight. We're continuing to fight the battle for freedom, for against jihadism, against darkness, and for light. And it is an honor and a privilege to be here at this time, but it's not an easy time. It's not an easy time to be fighting the battles of Israel. Let's get a little bit of a feeling of what it really looks like. Kind of let's do the intro to the battle, the war that we're fighting. The Arabs call it the Al-Aqsa Flood. The jihadists call it the Al-Aqsa Flood. And we're living it. You know, we're living in super dramatic times right now, super energetic times. There's so many thoughts and emotions that go through every single day. We had some very beautiful people killed just in the last 24 hours. And I want to mention their names: Yitzhar Horman, Yuval Nir, Netzer Simchi, and Gabi Shani, young men fighting in Gaza, in northern Gaza. The first man, Yitzhar, was the head of a very special, he wasn't the head of it, but he was a commander within the Shaldag unit, which is Air Force Special Forces. And some of the best and brightest are falling in this battle. So it's not just, you know, something of a Facebook live stream. It's very real. And we are definitely, you know, suffering pain. But the enemy is suffering even more than us, Israel. We are inflicting damage on the enemy. But is that damage enough? Is it something that uproots the jihad forever from our land? Or is it window dressing? But the jihad is definitely being struck hard, no question about it. Hamas. Still, I started the program talking about the name. And one of the things I think is a mismatch is that the enemy calls this the Al-Aqsa Flood. Is that, what do we call it? We call it Blades of Steel. Okay, what does that mean? I don't know. Maybe it's like an AI generated name. I don't know. I'm not sure what the Israeli name is. So I discussed it when I was myself this week on the Temple Mount in Jerusalem. So here's me from the heart of the world, the holiest place of the world, the Temple Mount, what the enemies of Israel called the Al-Aqsa compound, is for us where the first and second and third temple, the two temples stood, and the third temple will once again. So here I was at that very holy place.
The enemies of Israel call the war that we're facing today the Al-Aqsa Flood. The Al-Aqsa Flood is, it means that they're trying to flood us out of this land. And the heart of it all is here, the Temple Mount. and that's the symbol that they use, the heart of Jerusalem. But when we look at this site, we see the third temple, we see the first temple, we see the second temple, the first commonwealth, the second commonwealth, and the third commonwealth. And so the Al-Aqsa flood is going to turn around on our enemies. Instead of flooding us out, the jihadis are the ones that are going to get flooded out. They're going to get flooded out of this place, and they're going to get flooded out of Gaza. They're going to get flooded out of this land. The jihad is a destructive ideology that destroys, that tries to destroy Israel and Jews, but it destroys the Arab society as well, and Muslim society. We've got to push back on that. We've got to let decent people have a decent life. This place is not supposed to be the heart of jihad. It's supposed to be a house of prayer for all nations. So let's turn that Al-Aqsa flood around with faith and with strength. Israel is going to be victorious here. We're going to flood out. Yes, it's going to be an Al-Aqsa flood. We're going to flood out the jihadis. We're going to destroy them. And instead, we're going to see an amazing time and a rebirth. The third commonwealth is here, and it's going to get only stronger. Amen.
What an honor and a privilege it is to be on the Temple Mount at this time and to connect to God and Hashem. Hashem, of course, means the name. That's the way Jews refer to God, and to be in that holiest place. And again, the enemy, they know what it's about, right? They're not just like it's about a small gain. They're about the whole enchilada, and the whole enchilada is Yerushalayim, Jerusalem. I was also in another spot just today, which is overlooking the Dead Sea. My army unit had a little bit of a kind of goodbye hike for one of our commanders who was leaving, and I got to be in one of the most beautiful places, and I so needed it. Really, it was you know, when you're at war, there's an attrition. And so I was so thankful that I had a little bit of an opportunity to get some sun, some nature, some the land of Israel. But these are the words that came to me there.
The land of Israel is just so beautiful, so special. It's a godly land. It's called the Holy Land. And it's a place that could be a light to the world, a place that could be, a place where you could connect spiritually. It's a spiritual capital of the world. And yet we're thrust once again into a war. And once again, the haters want to destroy us. They want to do another Holocaust on us. They want to get rid of us from this land with an ideology of hate and darkness. And so it's like, it's just a battle between chaos and Garden of Eden. Israel wants to be a Garden of Eden and wants to be a blessing for this region, for the Abrahamic region, the so-called Middle East. I prefer the name the Abrahamic region. It wants to be a light. It wants to share that light. And instead, we are fighting for our life against rapists and people of darkness that want to subdue and suppress, so-called in the name of God. What a lie. What a lie. And what an opportunity we have to live in a beautiful world. Will we succumb to the darkness? Will we submit to that darkness and let them take over the world? Or will we push back with light, with joy, with love, with family, with blessings, with spirituality? This is the opportunity, and Israel's got to fight right now those forces of darkness. And wherever you are, please support us in our fight. Push back against the jihadists and their narratives. Their narratives are lies, and they're here to subdue and suppress us. They're not here to grow us. And also the idea of a two-state solution is the Western part of that jihadi narrative, that we should cut up this tiny land and give it over to the jihad. The West is pushing that. Let's not succumb to these bad ideas. Let's allow this land to flourish. The Jewish people belong in Judea, in this land, and when they sit on this land in peace and in security, it'll be a blessing for the world and for the Arab world. This is the Abrahamic region, and it wants that blessing. Bless Israel, and you shall be blessed. That's just the deal. We will bless you. But bless us and let us have that time of peace. I guess we're first going to have to finish off this time of war before we have peace. May we have success in war, and Bezrat Hashem, with the help of God, we'll have that peace.
Okay, so that was me, both on the Temple Mount and overlooking the Dead Sea. Two very biblical, very holy places, and very special times. Again, I could feel the emotion and the issues that are out there. By the way, I wanted to correct myself. It's Yitzhar Hoopman or Hoffman that was killed today in Gaza, 36 years old, a fighter of Israel. The soldiers are going through a lot, but in some ways, the soldiers are the best, having the best of the times. Why? Because they're in battle, and they're not succumbing to some of the weak voices. Rather, they're in the ecstasy of the holy act of getting rid of the enemies of Israel. And so They are just the backbone of the country right now. And I've had the real honor of being part of their part of the IDF at this time. You know, I was already out of reserves. I had finished my reserve duty period, and they called me back in, as the old movie quote goes. And so I just can't tell you the honor that I've had, really, to be in uniform and to be part of the fight. A great musician, Yishai Rebo, one of Israel's beloved musicians, is out there every single night doing concerts for soldiers. And he's giving a lot of light and a lot of what we call Yiddishkeit, Judaism, which gives wind in the sails of the fight for victory, for spiritual victory, and not just physical victory. Yishai Rebo was in the town of Hebron, where I have the honor of being the international spokesman. And he played from a truck. It's like truck pulls up and they open up the curtain on the side of the truck and boom, there it is. So it's just an awesome honor to see Yishai Rebo and others like him coming to places like Hebron and giving us of his time. And he was singing not for the community and not for the tourists, but for the soldiers. Here's a video that I shot with Yishai Rebo in Hebron.
Yishai Rebo playing for soldiers in Hebron.
That was Yishai Rebo. He shares a name with me, although he spells it incorrectly. That's okay. And he actually also, after that concert, he went up to the tomb of Yishai and Ruth in Hebron, which is a project that I've been working on for a lot of years. And he got to be there and he sang a song. It was pretty special and pretty awesome to see him up there. But again, the point of that video was to hear that song, to see him playing in Hebron, you know, the heart of Judea. But more than that, it's the power of the Israeli soldier that's out there right now fighting for our peoplehood, laying life on the line. In Hebrew, we say chiruf nefesh, like offering up the soul. And four amazing soldiers killed, families forever changed just in the last 24 hours. And yet that sacrifice, it's unbearable, the pain. And yet There's the sense that the sacrifice is something that it's a real offering right now in our time, and that the nation wants to fight that evil. There really is a battle against Amalek. And the International Court of Justice at The Hague said that we cannot use the language of Amalek. And I want to say, Amalek, 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 okay? You're not going to stop us from using the language of the Bible. And speaking of the language and the language of the Bible, we have with us a very special guest, Rabbi Stephen Przanski, who was an American Orthodox rabbi for many years, author, lawyer, and leader in the Orthodox Jewish community. He was known as being, for a quarter century, the spiritual leader of Congregation B'nai Yeshurun in Teaneck, which was really the stalwart of Zionism in New Jersey and really in the big Jewish area of New York. He's authored many books on religious topics and has been an executive at the Rabbinical Council of America, amongst many things. Rabbi Przanski, thank you very much for joining us. So good to have you with us.
Isha, it's my pleasure.
All right. Rabbi Przanski, I'm going to, I want to ask you a lot of things today about really where the war is and where it's going. And I also want to talk with you a little bit about the legal perspective, because there was this case against Israel, the case of genocide against Israel. But an amazing video emerged just today, and I wanted to play this for you, which is a South African city congressman in Johannesburg before he goes into the council chamber. He made this video explaining the challenges that he faces there. I wanted you to see that and react to it.
Friends in South Africa and all around the globe, my name is Daniel Shea and I'm a city councillor here in Johannesburg, South Africa. Behind me is the council chamber, where shortly we will begin our first meeting of 2024. In this chamber today, I'll be confronted by a mayor representing a Muslim party that campaigns extensively on its extremely anti-Zionist stance. I'll be confronted by councillors from the Economic Freedom Fighters and the extreme left-wing movement pushing for the cutting of diplomatic ties with Israel. And of course, I'll be confronted by the African National Congress, the party leading the libelous genocide charge against Israel at the International Court of Justice. To sum it up, I'll be facing off against some of the most prominent anti-Semites in the world right now. These anti-Semites are acting as proxies for Iran. They want you and me to be ashamed of our heritage, to hide our beliefs, and to silence our convictions. I stand here today to tell them straight that they will never succeed. I stand here today proudly with my kippah on my head, an Israeli flag on my tie, and a yellow ribbon on my chest. I stand here today and proudly say that I am a Jew and I am a Zionist, and that every single Jew and every single Zionist around the world should join me in celebrating our beliefs and our heritage. We will not bow to fear and oppression. I pray for the release of the hostages and for deliverance from those who seek to destroy us. Shalom, and Am Yisrael Chai.
All right. Rabbi Przanski, I want you to know that right after this, he goes into the chambers and they basically call him out for wearing this like weird symbol on his tie, and he stands up for it. And then this African lady gets up there and she's like, we have never challenged people's rights to religious freedom in this chamber, and we will not start now. So just before we get to where the war is at, let's talk about the legal war and this case against Israel at The Hague. What do you think, Rabbi?
Kol hakavod to him for standing up for Israel and its Jewish identity very proudly. We need more of that in the world. Rather than to cower and hide, we should stand up strongly and proudly and forcefully for who we are, what we represent. After all, we're the chosen people, and we shouldn't hide it. We shouldn't shy away from it. We should, in fact, declare to the world that they have a lot to learn from us, especially now, against our will, but nevertheless, how to conduct warfare in an urban setting. And it's only come out the last week or so, ignored by the biased diplomats and the jurists in The Hague, that the UN released a report in 2022 lamenting, bemoaning the fact that the civilian casualty rate in urban warfare is 9 to 1, meaning for every one soldier killed in urban warfare, 9 civilians are killed. In Afghanistan, the Americans were a little more careful, and 5 civilians, Afghans, were killed for every one American soldier. In Iraq, apparently, they were even more careful, and 4 Iraqi civilians were killed for every American soldier. Well, if you just compute the numbers that even Hamas is releasing about the total casualties in Gaza and what Israel has said about the number of terrorists who've been eliminated in Gaza, the civilian to combatant casualty rate is less than 2-1, meaning Israel has the highest record, the greatest efficiency in minimizing civilian casualties in this conflict. And Gaza has the added curveball of having much of the terrorist infrastructure underground for the first time in human history. So literally, our soldiers are entering places where they're in the dark, aside from the fuel and electricity we're forced to provide to our enemies, but they're doing in such a way as minimizing civilian casualties and jeopardizing their own well-being. It's unprecedented in the history of the world, in the history of warfare. And what do we get for it? This type of indictment at the International Court of Injustice. It's obscene to add to the other obscenities that we've witnessed in the last 3.5 months.
Was it right for Israel to enter into that court, legitimize that court, or should have Israel skipped it? My good friend Eugene Kantorovich argued that we didn't have to be there in the first place.
I think he's right. If I was making the decision, I think I would have gone only to give a speech and said basically what I just said now, how this tribunal is the height of hypocrisy. And barring a page from Chaim Herzog at the United Nations in 1975, I would have said my words, taken their indictment and torn it in half and walked out. Because to actually engage in some type of dispassionate analysis and rebuttal of their charges is demeaning. But nonetheless, they did it. I think the ICJ came up with an interim decision that surprised many people in that they didn't outright condemn Israel. They didn't call for a ceasefire, but they did leave the accusation of genocide open for future discussion. But nevertheless, it's probably better than we could have hoped for. On the other hand, it is meant to demean and it is meant to announce to the world, essentially, that when Jews defend themselves, there's something wrong with that. That Hamas and other Arab terrorist groups and radical Muslims feel they have a natural right to kill Jews. But Jews do not have a natural right to defend themselves and take the war to the enemy. And somehow, if the enemy hides among civilians, well, then everything has to end. Because, oh, well, we can't do anything about it. We have to allow our civilians to be murdered and raped and mutilated because now they're hiding among civilians. Of course, it's absurd. No one else would tolerate such a situation. No one in the history of warfare has tolerated such a situation. None of the wars going on now elsewhere in the world, not the wars that America fought recently in this region, and certainly not the way America fought World War II or the Allies fought World War II. You look at the bombings of Tokyo and Hiroshima and Nagasaki, just on the Asian front, and look at the way the Allies conducted mass bombings in Dresden and Hamburg, killing tens and tens of thousands of German civilians. In Japan, the tally was close to 300,000 to 400,000 Japanese civilians killed in just the raids in those three cities, including the two atomic bombs. And they say, what are we talking about here? We're talking about, yeah, every life is precious, but it's a relative handful of a population that I must remind your listeners is not as innocent as they're portrayed. It's a civilian population that hundreds, if not thousands, took part in the invasion on October 7th, in which they, these so-called civilians, voted Hamas, a terrorist group of genocidal maniacs, into power in 2006, and therefore they're not even entitled, they should not be entitled to the same protections that ordinary civilians are granted. They, in many cases, are knowingly allowing themselves to be used as human shields and knowingly allowing their homes to be used as bases of terror. After all, many of the shafts that lead into these tunnels are found inside the homes of these so-called civilians, not to mention the schools, the mosques, and the hospitals. So Hamas, a depraved group, has violated every tenet of the norms of even civilized warfare. And therefore, I think we make a big mistake in giving any type of legitimacy to an ICJ proceeding, as well as paying a little too much attention to the fates of these not so innocent Gaza civilians.
Rabbi Przanski, you're talking about this institution, which it's the trick that it uses is the name and the international type of aura of seriousness and serious jurisprudence. It's got like a kind of, you know, it's a kind of put on, right? It's a kind of show. A similar organization, which even has more damaging effect, is UNRWA, an organization that's dedicated to the refugee status of the so-called Palestinians. And I want you to know that I learned what is the yearly budget of UNRWA. The answer is $1.6 billion, billion, with about 30,000 workers. So now they've identified that at least 10 or a little bit more of these workers were actively involved in the October 7th massacre. But soldier friends of mine are telling me that in every house that they go into, there is stuff from UNRWA, from the poor to the super rich. There's like UNRWA stuff. UNRWA is an organization that's dedicated to teaching two things. One is jihadism, i.e. hate of Israel. But the other one is a term that I used on Twitter, and a lot of people picked up on it, which a term maybe I created it. It's called refugeeism. They're teaching them the narrative of Palestinian refugeeism. It's well known that it's the only organization that's dedicated to keeping a refugee population, even to the fourth generation, an unheard of thing around the world where refugee organizations try to matriculate refugees into their host societies. My question is, are we going to succumb to this thing, or is Israel going to wake up and be like, that's it? You know, we're not going to let this kind of organization, and we're not going to let the faux aura of international legitimacy be the thing, the stumbling block that keeps us from empowering, keeps this organization from being empowered in our land to teach both jihadism and refugeeism.
Let's start with the original sin, which is that there is a UN agency that deals with refugees across the world. Only the Palestinians have their own agency to deal with them. And like you say very correctly, UNRWA has been a force for destabilizing the situation, for perpetuation of the refugee status of the Palestinians. And at this particular point, it actually is not so much a wing of Hamas, but it is indistinguishable from Hamas. You said there are tens of people. It's actually in the hundreds. And the estimate today of the 12,000 Gazans who work for UNRWA, 6,000 of them are either members of Hamas or related to members of Hamas. Everything that UNRWA brings into Gaza falls into the jurisdiction, the nefarious hands of Hamas. Just the other day, even they admitted that 70% of the humanitarian aid that for inexplicable reasons Israel's allowing into Gaza, 70% is taken over by Hamas. So we are literally subsidizing, electrifying, feeding our enemy and prolonging the war. You ask, will we wake up and see UNRWA as the enemy? Well, I should add that UNRWA is not only limited to Gaza. UNRWA has a very active and deleterious relationship in Yerushalayim, in Jerusalem, in the Holy City. They run at least six schools there, and they fill the minds of their students with Jew-hating ideology, of Israel's illegitimacy, of the right that Arabs have to murder Jews in any way they can, to the extent that you can see these clips on the internet, if they teach their children that if an Arab has a chance to kill a Jew, if a Muslim to be precise, has the opportunity to kill a Jew and he doesn't, he's a bad Muslim. Well, this is UNRWA-related facilities. I think what Israel should do, not only is ban UNRWA from Gaza and from the entire land of Israel, but at this particular point, the UN, which is an organization that is majority dictatorship and tyranny, really have no place anymore in the land of Israel. And their headquarters on the top of the aptly named Hill of Evil Council in Yerushalayim, in Jerusalem, it should be disbanded. They should be expelled. Their diplomats should be deemed persona non grata. And as Rabbi Warren Goldstein said last week in a interview, the time has come that the democracies of the world, the 35, 40 remaining democracies in the world that value freedom and morality and human rights, we have to band together and form our own international organization, because the UN is not only flawed, it's defective. We spoke about the ICJ a few moments ago. Well, the justices of that court are chosen by the United Nations. So you have people sitting on that court representing despots, representing dictatorships and tyranny, representing injustice. And yet they find themselves in a nice black robe and the strange white wig, and they're pontificating on matters of morality and justice, which are completely beyond their purview and which they have no background for, coming from the countries for which they do. Yeah, so if I was a decision maker, and I guess as Israeli citizens, decision makers, but what we should be doing is urging our government to get rid of UNRWA, to make the Palestinian refugees, as they're now in the fourth generation, like you said, part of the general UN refugee organizational framework, and begin the process of getting rid of every single refugee camp, wherever they're located in the land of Israel. Because what UNRWA is doing now, it's not a relief organization, it's not a works organization, it's a support of terror organization, and that has to end. And I hope our government has the courage to look beyond, far beyond, what has become the norm, the status quo, the default position, and start thinking out of the box how to change the situation completely. That's true in Gaza, it's true in Judea Samaria, God's land, and it's true as well in regarding UNRWA. We have to change the narrative. They no longer have a place here, and nor does the United Nations.
So we've now talked about two external organizations coming in from the international community. We're talking about the ICJ judging us. We're talking about UNRWA teaching jihadism and refugeeism. But jihadism exists also within our very Knesset. And I want to show you a video of Ayman Ouda, who is the head of the joint list. He's a Knesset member in our Knesset, getting paid a handsome salary. I actually know exactly where he's from, because he's actually born in the same village of Haifa that I'm from. And I know his broader family as well, which are some of the luckiest Arabs in the whole Middle East, living in one of the most beautiful parts and getting great educations and a great life and beautiful homes. But this Ayman Ouda is a bad seed, and he's speaking here in Hebrew. There's subtitles. I'll translate a little bit right after as well, but if you just look at your screens, you'll see what Ayman Ouda said in the Knesset. I don't know if I'll play the whole clip, but I'll play part of it for you, Rabbi. Let's take a look.
Dam kulam al ha-kibush ha-arur shelachem.
עכשיו זה מים מציונות מהתיישבות תל אביב.
Dam kulam al ha-kibush ha-arur shelachem. Ha-kibush me'avir. Ha-kowach me'avir. אתם מתנהגים לא רק כפושעים, אלא גם כטיפשים. עוד סבב. תראו מה יש במחנה פליטים ג'נין. כולם גאים בג'נין ובצדק. בצדק הם גאים, ועכשיו עוד אנשים יצטרפו ללוחמים נגד הכיבוש הארור הזה. אתם לא רק פושעים, אתם גם טיפשים. אתם גם טיפשים. הראו את העם הפלסטיני מול הכיבוש, מול ארצות הברית. העם הפלסטיני עומד לבד.
אני מבקש לדבר
אחרי מול הכיבוש הארור וגם מול ארצות הברית. למה העם הפלסטיני ממשיך לה...
All right, so basically Ayman Uda is yelling from the podium, and he says the occupation is not only it's an occupation, it's your stupidity. And he says, look at Jenin. Everybody's going to join the jihad against you. He says the proud Palestinian people standing up against Israel and against the United States. He is being the spokesman for the so-called resistance, right? To some extent, I must say, admirably so. I mean, say he does a good job. And in general, I think the narrative of the quote unquote Palestinian has traction in the world. It has a lot of traction because it's a very simple and understandable narrative. Occupation: you guys are stealing somebody else's land. We're the brown or black people. We're the indigenous people. You guys are white colonialists, and that's really the track. You guys are foreigners. You have nothing to do with this land. You've taken over our land. And I saw an awesome, awesome graphic. And when I say awesome, I mean I respect it. Of course, it's my enemy's graphic, but I respect, because that's just a general principle of mine, which is to respect the enemy. An awesome graphic where it was like an AI-generated graphic, and you see these tanks and jets coming at, you know, this again, quote-unquote, an Arab, quote-unquote, Palestinian fighter. And his feet are these roots in the ground, and he's standing up against this a massive onslaught, and the legs are like these like tree trunk olive roots. And it was just a powerful graphic. And so there's Ayman Uda so we were talking, Rabbi Przanski, we were talking beforehand about external organizations, but from the very within, and from within our very Knesset stand these people who really claim to be these representative of righteousness, but they are nothing but a front for the jihad. But you know, how do you explain that exists within Israel?
I was in the Knesset today on other business, and I saw Ayman Uda walking around freely. He's able to speak his mind. Incidentally, I walked past the door that said no entry unless to authorize personnel. I heard screaming at the other on the other side of the door, and then I realized that's the Knesset plenum. So they were in session, and they're just all yelling at each other. He walks around freely because this is a democracy. I dare say that in any other Arab country, if he found himself in opposition to the government policy, he would not be walking around so freely. So there's no doubt they exploit the fact that we are a democracy. And look, they're citizens and they have the right to vote for their representatives. A few points should be mentioned, though. Poll after poll say that polls of the Arab Israelis, that if in fact we ever succumb to utter foolishness and allowed a second Palestinian state to be established, you know, the two-state illusion, 90% of Arab Israelis would rather remain in Israel under Jewish sovereignty than move to that Palestinian state, because they know that life is good here. And yet they are infected with this jihadist mentality, with a radical Muslim ideology that dictates that there is no room in the Middle East for a Jewish, for that matter, any type of non-Muslim sovereign presence. So in that sense, they would vote against their own interests. They would rather live with Jews in a Jewish state than live with Muslims. But you'd have to take it to a step further. Of course, when he's talking about occupation, he's not talking about Jenin, which is not under occupation anymore. You know, Jenin, the audience should know, is under the jurisdiction of the Palestinian Authority, the PA. So if in fact they wanted to liquidate the Jenin refugee camp and build them permanent housing, there's absolutely nothing stopping them. But the reason why they don't do it is to perpetuate this victim mentality that the life is against them, the Jews are against them, and the Jews took their land. Well, now they're living on the land, and they could just as easily build themselves housing and get jobs other than the production of rockets and missiles to shoot against Jews. That they don't is because you have an entire entity that's only devoted to one purpose, and that's the eradication of the state of Israel and the extermination of every Jew living here. But I would add one point. While he exercises his freedoms and speaks about occupation and now we're foolish not to accommodate them, we should be saying again and again what's obvious to any historian. The Palestinian, the so-called Palestinian presence in the land of Israel is barely a century and a quarter old. They're a new phenomenon in this part of the world. It's a contrived identity that only arose to counter the Zionist movement. So therefore, I've issued this challenge many times in the past. Name a Palestinian writer from the 19th century. Name a Palestinian scholar from the 18th century. Name a Palestinian artist from the 16th century. Name a Palestinian cleric from the 15th century. They don't exist. As opposed to the Jews, we have a presence in this land since we entered with Joshua of almost 3,000 years ago. We have a constant presence, 32 and a half centuries ago. We have a constant presence in the land of Israel. You want me to name Jewish writers and scholars and artists and thinkers and authors from the 19th, 18th, 17th, 16th, 15th centuries and before that who lived in the land of Israel? I could do it in an instant, but you can't do it for the Palestinians because they didn't really exist. So the more they cry and shout about the occupation and how we took their land, etc., the more any person who has the even a basic knowledge of history knows how false it is. And the louder they yell, the more their claims are suspect and easily repudiated. And that's what we should be doing. And our government does not always do that. And you have, even now in Israel, it's much less than before, this flirtation with the two-state illusion. We have to end those thoughts because they don't want a second state. They don't want a state. They want to destroy us. And we just look back in our history. The last, I was just thinking today on my way back from the Knesset that I started coming here in the 60s, even though I don't look that old. I started coming in the 60s. And then I remember we were told, do not watch for boxes on the street. Even coins might have bombs in them. Your refrigerator bombs. And in the 70s, they progressed to more sophisticated bombs. And they started with shootings. And then they started the stonings and the shootings in the 80s. And the 90s and the O's became the era of more and more shootings on the streets and suicide bombings and bombs on buses and pizzerias and shopping malls. And then in the teens, that's or the late O's, that's when they start with the rockets and the missiles. When are we going to learn the basic lesson? They don't want us here. They just want to kill us. And they've done it in many, many different ways since I've been visiting, since I was a child in the 60s. They don't want us here. To give them, as the foolish Americans say, why don't we just reward Hamas and give them a state? They don't want a state. They want to destroy us. And once we recognize that, we'll be a stronger nation for it. I think that ideology will pervade our political system, except for the fringe elements, and we'll know how to deal with our enemy who prays every day for our destruction.
Rabbi Stephen Przanski, thank you very much for your clarity. It's good to hear from you. I hope that you're successful in Knesset. We got to move the dial here a little bit. We got to use this war to move the dial, to kick the situation in a different way a little bit, to get people out of this zombiness.
So one way I'll add, right, we read in the Torah this week, "Vatem tiulim amlechat konim v'goy kadosh." God says to us, I will make you into a kingdom of priests and a holy nation. What's a holy nation? A holy nation is a nation that's devoted to sanctifying God's name. In everything we do, certainly in the military, but in every aspect of life, we should be involved in sanctifying God's name. And therefore, I think one mistake we have to stop making that our politicians have made since time immemorial is looking at the resolution of the conflict somehow in terms of how will we ensure our security? Because that's a fool's errand. There will always be people in the world saying, okay, they'll disarm, they'll demilitarize, we'll send in international forces to protect you. If we make that the reason, the justification for our possession and residence in the land of Israel, it's counterproductive. We should make our residence here based on only one phenomenon, and that is it's God's land. And God gave us this land in the Bible. And he promised us that if we're unworthy, we'll be exiled. And yet at the end of days or before the end of days, he will restore us to this land. That's why we're here. Not because we need a haven or a refuge. We're here because God gave us this land and promised us he will return us to this land at the end of days. That's the argument we should be employing. Call it God's narrative. Call it keep God's land. That is Kiddush Hashem. That is sanctifying God's name. And that is the mandate that we received in this week's Torah portion. We'll be a Gai Kadosh, a holy nation, a nation devoted to the sanctification of God's name.
Amen. Zrat Hashem. Rabbi, thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you.
You know, it's people say to me, from your mouth to God's ears. So I always say to them, how about from his mouth to our ears?
That's correct. That we have to be open to that frequency to hear the messages that he's sending us.
Amen. Rabbi Todah Rabbah, thank you so much for being with us. And it was great to have Rabbi Stephen Przanski on the show, an excellent and amazing intellectual and leader in the Jewish people. And I just want to read a few of the stuff that you guys sent me, people that are watching live right now. For example, Layla Miller, writing a lot. She's excited. She's on it. And she says, you can't occupy your own land. It's our land. And she says, stop agreeing that all Israeli Jews are white. They're Middle Eastern. That might stop the white colonizers' lie in the West. And she continues saying, Israel needs to change the language. No refugees, no refugee camps, no such thing as Palestinians. They're from Gaza or from West Bank. Arabs are the occupiers and the colonizers. They're not from Gaza or the West Bank. I understand. Let's see who else. We have Gai Nefeli writes, I don't understand to this day about any universal concern about the Palestine people in the West Bank and Gaza. They're from Jordan and Egypt. The Palestine hoax. When does it ever end? And with regarding to Ayman Uda that I played before, Troll Nerd says, send him to Janine there if he likes it so much. And Daniel says, no, they should send him to Gaza. So basically, a lot of people are not happy with the stuff that he was saying there. And Mark, my good friend, Dr. Mark Pickles, says, indeed, the Nakba is, in fact, the loss of honor. Passed on is a shame down the generations of losing wars to Jews. And Troll Nerd also says, UNRWA equals Hamas. So there you go. Thank you very much, all my friends from all over the world. I want to bless you. I have a deal for you. I'm going to make a deal with all of my international listeners. You send a blessing to Israel, and we'll bless you back. Okay? You guys send your brachot, your blessings. I want you to bless Israel. And what we're going to do is we're going to bless you back. We're going to make it into a simple biblical deal. You bless us, we bless you back. That's all. It's like, it's not going to become like, it's not something that's going to happen through some kind of like weird automatic spiritual, like, you know, like in the heavens. No, no, no. You bless Israel and we bless you back. And I'm sending blessings right now to all those that love Israel, all those that love Israel, the Jewish people, God, and the Bible. All those, I'm sending them blessings. That's part of the deal. All right. Finally, for those listening on the Ishai Fleischer show, you won't be able to see this part. You'll just hear the music. It's just about 57 seconds. This is the music to The Good, the Bad, and the Ugly. But for those watching right now live or on Facebook, Twitter, or YouTube, this is a great video of that Israeli soldiers made of themselves being tough guys, being the beautiful, awesome, the good, the badass, and the awesome Israeli soldier. Let's take a look. Okay, so that was Israeli soldiers showing their toughness and their cuteness, and a little bit of humor is so needed at the same time as that we're dealing with all of this. We need a little bit of humor, and we need those blessings, and we need to smile, because today 4 Jews have fallen. And so we pray for the souls of Yitzhak Hoffman, Yuval Nir, Netzer Simchi, and Gabi Shani, who fell today. The show is dedicated to them. I wish I could do more. We all wish we could do more for your soul, for your family. But at least what we could do is mention your name here on the show. I want to thank everybody from all over the world for being with us. Thank you. God bless you. God love you. And may you be blessed in all of your steps. May God bless your water and your bread, and he may bless your families and your spirituality. And wherever you are, pray towards Jerusalem. That's my advice to you. Pray towards Jerusalem. Bless Jerusalem. Bless Israel, but face Jerusalem. Whoever you are, Jew or non-Jew, that is the first step, which is when we pray towards Jerusalem. That's praying for the strength and the peace of Jerusalem.
Okay, thank you very much, Rabbi Przanski. Thank you very much for being with me for the live segment. And before we go on, we have one more segment, actually one and a half. We have Ben Bresky coming up, and we have just a small piece of table Torah. Before we go to that, I just want to thank Yocheved Seidman, Moshe Herman, Tabitha, Ben Bresky, Lou when we're live. He was live with me yesterday. And also David, our team member for the YouTube Yishai Fleischer TV. Thank you very much for that. Thank you very much, my amazing team. You guys really get it out there. Thank you to our sponsors, including the good folks at prohibitionpickle.co.il. And I got great yummies sponsors.
Yeah, delicious pickles. That's and krauts. Right.
Thank you very much for sending it all the way from that donation from the United States and bringing it to our house. And
it was so sweet. That was very, very thoughtful of
Well,
you.
I think it was more sour.
Well, some of the pickles were sweet and sour.
I guess it was sweet and sour. Okay. So that's prohibitionpickle.co.il. Our good friends at Hebronfund.org, keeping Hebron strong. And in fact, I'm going to Hebron right now to accept an ambulance from Mogen David Adom.
Mogen David Adom? Are you going to be drinking Manischewitz while you're there?
Mogen David Adom.
Little Streitz matzahs?
Mada, Mogen David Adom. We have the amazing Maggid family who donated a brand new ambulance, and it's coming today. And little old Yishai had a part in that, and I have I'm going to be accepting it in the name of the family today. I'm very excited.
That's very nice. That's a big deal.
It is.
It's a little piece of life saving on wheels.
Nachon, and it strengthens the community. So thank you very much, Mara Mogen David Adom. Thank you very much to the Maggid family, and thank you very much to the Hebron Fund, hebronfund.org. Of course, if you want to go to the Temple Mount, I was on the Temple Mount this week. You're going to hear. Oh, you heard about that, and so. Check out highonthehard.com. They'll get you on the Temple Mount in holiness and in awesomeness. Highonthehard.com. Our good friends at retrowatchguy.com. If you go to the Retro Watch Guy Instagram, you will see a picture of me with my army getup and my Tissot watch, right? Because my other watch took a hit and is being fixed. So I'm wearing my Shabbat. Regular, what's it called? Daily, my Shabbat driver is my daily driver right now, but it's working great. It's from the 70s. By Mimahem Bazman Hazeh. It's giving me time from way back. It's giving me good time right now. So that's retrowatchguy.com. And of course, our good friends at Kosher Cycle Tours. The time is coming, Malka, that you and I are going to take a Kosher Cycle tour.
I got to get
the land of Israel.
Those squishy pants.
Speaking of that, tomorrow morning, you and I are going to the Dead Sea, where
what, not for relaxation.
No. My son, our son, Elazar, and myself, and my sister Racheli, we're going to do the 5K at the Dead Sea Marathon. Okay,
there is a 41K or whatever, 42. I don't know what it is.
Yeah, the marathon.
So lots of K.
Yeah,
and then there's like a half, and then there's a teensy weensy.
Yeah,
you're doing the 5K.
We're doing a special K.
Special
and,
K.
And
my job is to hold a sign on the side.
Woo!
Be like, go, tie your shoelace first, but go like that.
Double knot. Okay. let me actually shift gears now and bring on our intrepid one and only reporter of history and knowledge, and that is Ben Bresky, with a very exciting segment about Moroccan Aliyah. And I want to say, okay, you know what? Let's just go for it. Let's just go for Ben Bresky with Moroccan Aliyah, and I'll explain a few things about Moroccans when we come back. Here we go. Ben, take it away.
This is a moment in Jewish history. In a recent show, I talked about the Baba Sari, the famous rabbi who moved from Morocco to Israel. He was one of many. The Jewish community of Morocco is one of the oldest and became one of the largest in the world. It developed unique customs, such as the holiday of Mimuna, which comes the day after Passover. This holiday has Jewish religious significance, as well as representing positive relations between Jews and Moroccans. However, when Arab nationalism took hold, the Jewish community began to leave in great numbers. As described in the previous episode, Rabbi Yisrael Abu Hatzera, better known as the Baba Sari, personally witnessed the execution of his brother in the 1920s. During the battles between the Moroccans and the French, the Moroccan leader of a town accused the Jews of siding with the French and ordered the execution of the entire community. However, in the end, Rabbi David Abu Hatzera told the community he would bear the burden, and he was executed, while the rest of the community was spared. Previously, a riot took place in the city of Fez in 1912, also in the context of the French-Moroccan conflict. 42 Jewish residents were killed when rioting took place in the Jewish quarter of the city. During World War II, France was occupied by Nazi Germany, and because Morocco was under French rule, this affected them too. Anti-Jewish laws were enacted by the Vichy government. However, Sultan Mohammed V of Morocco resisted these laws. The Jews of Morocco were never deported to concentration camps, unlike other countries, and the city of Casablanca became a haven for refugees. Unlike Arab leaders such as Haj Amin Husseini, the Mufti of Jerusalem, who was an active supporter of Hitler and even recruited Muslims to the Nazi cause, Sultan Mohammed saw himself as a protector of all the citizens of Morocco, regardless of faith. To this day, some Moroccan Jews hang his photo on their wall. Israel became independent from the British on May 14, 1948, and the surrounding Arab countries attacked. Arabs and Muslims from around the world began expressing anti-Jewish rhetoric. Sultan Mohammed declared that he had affirmed the Jews' traditional protected status in Morocco, but also warned them not to demonstrate any solidarity with the Zionist cause. Despite this, rioting broke out against Jews in the cities of Ouja and Djerida in June of 1948. 47 Jewish residents were killed. It started several days before when Muslims began to boycott Jews. 5 people were killed in the Shouk El Yahoud, the Jewish market in Ouja. Rioting spread the next day to the nearby city of Djerida, in which the mob killed Rabbi Moshe Cohen and his family. Among the Jewish dead were 10 children and 10 women. The Jewish community had already begun to flee Morocco, but in the year after the riots, 18,000 Moroccan Jews left for Israel. Up until 1952, that number rose to 28,000. Morocco had become independent from the French in 1956, and full rights and status were conferred to the Jewish population. However, they did impose travel restrictions. A steady flow of Jews left Morocco for Israel until 1961, when the government finally began cracking down and banned all immigration and any encouragement to do so. This was when the Israelis decided to begin a secret immigration program called Operation Yachin. The issuance of passports to Jews was reduced almost to zero. Jewish organizations stepped into action and began to issue fake passports. Youth volunteered to ensure that the immigrants were safely transported to a beach where boats awaited them and took them on small ships to Gibraltar or Spain, from where they sailed on to Israel. Families were instructed to get rid of as much of their property as possible without arousing suspicion among their Muslim neighbors, and to leave Morocco with only one suitcase. To defend the Jewish community from attacks, clandestine self-defense groups were created. This was called the Misgeret, or framework. It also quietly facilitated the immigration. One of those young Israelis involved was Yehudit Yehezkeli Galili, who was sent to Morocco as a kindergarten teacher. Her kindergarten doubled as a center for Misgeret activity. She helped arrange passports and worked with the Jewish underground and with children in transit camps. One of her fellow activists was Shlomo Yehezkeli, whom she later married. The two together were awarded for their work in helping children. The French newspaper Le Monde reported in 1961 that some 30,000 Jews had left Morocco illegally since the country attained independence. It stated that Moroccan Jews suffer either individually or collectively, asserting that arrests of Jews had recently increased, and even the most inoffensive Jewish organizations were regarded with suspicion by Moroccan authorities. Jews were illegally leaving Morocco at the rate of 2,000 a year. The paper added that the deterioration of conditions for Moroccan Jews was particularly regrettable because Morocco was probably the only Middle Eastern or Arab country where Jews could live harmoniously with the Muslim majority. From 1961 to 1964, about 97,000 Jews left Morocco for Israel. Unfortunately, not everyone made it. In 1961, a boat called the Egoz had been traveling back and forth to Morocco to transport Jewish immigrants. A storm at sea caused the boat to sink, leading to the deaths of 46 people. French newspapers reported that the drownings were a result of the refusal of the Moroccan government to grant passports to Jews so they could leave the country openly. In Jerusalem, Dr. Nahum Goldman expressed the hope that the disaster would induce the Moroccan government to carry out its pre-independence pledges and obligations to the United Nations under the Human Rights Charter and enable the departure of Moroccan Jews by more normal ways. He said the tragedy again proves that the desire on the part of Moroccan Jews to immigrate to Israel was so strong they were ready to risk their lives for it. The sinking of the Egoz led the Israelis to create Operation Mural. They proposed allowing Moroccan children to spend vacations in Switzerland, but they recruited Jewish children and the vacation was only a stopping point for them to travel on to Israel. One of those who participated was British Jewish activist David Littman, who was not told of the full extent of the operation. He, his wife, and his young daughter were sent by the Jewish agency to Morocco to help Jewish children. The following is David Littman from a documentary on Operation Mural.
On the 8th of June, I came with the first group, 80 names, I remember, to see Alawi Tajuddin. He was the Khalifa, as he was called, the person in charge of the first arrondissement, district of Casablanca, which we visited. He looked at the passport, collective passports. Suddenly he said, "This is a plot. This is prepared. Mr. Littman, you shouldn't have become involved. How can I know a difference between Amar, Ifra, Knafu, Shriki, and Malka? It means nothing to me. How can I know that these are all Jewish children? Please look again and be sure. Are you sure?" He looked at the passports and he said, "There's no doubt. This is a plot. This is a Zionist plot, and I won't have anything to do with it." And I said, "What? You are accusing me of being involved? This is impossible."
Most of our problems were to be solved by my excellent relations with a high security officer.
Then I happened to be at the swimming pool, the Kontiki, where I met again Mohammed Rissi. He said, "How is it going, Mr. Littman, with your group from the Martyrs of the Resistance?" I said, "It's going fine, but I've just been accused of some Zionist activity. I don't know what they're talking about." He also touched his head and said, they're crazy. And the result was that when I went back the next time, Tajuddin said, "I don't know who you have on your side, but from now on, you bring all the passports you want. They will all be signed automatically, but I will still do my report."
Eventually, Littman was told of the full extent of his work, and years later he was honored with a special award for rescuing children. The story of Moroccan Aliyah has many twists and turns. Today, Morocco has joined the Abraham Accords. The holiday of Mimuna is an officially recognized Israeli holiday, and Jews of Moroccan descent are prominent in all fields of Israeli society. This has been a moment in Jewish history. Thank you to Yishai Fleischer. Thank you to all the listeners, and shalom.
All right, we're back. Ben Bresky, thank you very much for the story of Moroccan Aliyah. I just want you to understand something about Moroccans.
Where is this about to go?
You have to be a little Moroccan in this country, in Israel. If you don't understand Moroccan food, you're going to be
they have
out.
Delicious food.
If you don't understand Moroccan prayers,
that's
if you don't know how to, if you don't know how to read a Moroccan sitter, if you can't get that, you will be out. What do I? Why do I say that? I was just at a Hachnasat Sefer Torah. They put in a new Sefer Torah at a Magav, which is a border police.
Right, because even at the police, they want a Sefer Torah.
Right, and then we had the whole event was Moroccan.
Oh, really?
Moroccan music, Moroccan rabbis, Moroccan Sefer Torah, Moroccan, everything Moroccan. Okay.
Cool.
Now, even the donor was a Syrian Jew. And which is not Morocco, but it doesn't matter if you don't understand the lingo, the sitter, the style, the food, and the sound, you're out. You have to understand Israel is a Middle East country. And so, for example, if you want to go to the army, you ever want to go to a synagogue in the army, you got to understand Moroccan. The guy who's going to be praying is likely to be Moroccan. And the sitter that you are like more likely to find is Moroccan. And so, therefore, all I'm trying to say is just learn Moroccan. Some people say
learn Moroccan. What does that mean?
Learn the culture of Moroccan Jewry. What am I saying here? Is that my
I don't know. Something? Yeah, that's confusing. What do you mean learn the culture? Am I supposed to go on Wikipedia? What are you talking about?
Go to their shuls and pray with them, to their synagogues and pray with them. Go to their house and eat their food.
Definitely
listen,
do that.
Listen to their songs and get their vibe. That's all I'm saying. Learn the vibe. I can't I'm not gonna do a 3-part class on how to be a Moroccan, but once you learn it, it is a wonderful and beautiful culture. My mom, God bless her, took a 10-day trip to Morocco and said it was just awesome. All I'm saying is what Ben Bresky just did about Moroccan Aliyah is important to the very culture of Israel. That's all I'm saying. Very important. I'm telling you from experience. It's a piece of info. Fine. Right. Malka, let's finish off the show. I want to give everybody, you know, their... you know, their right to go on to the next podcast or whatever they got to do. But I do want to talk just a tad, Malka, about the Torah portion. This is one of your favorites.
Yes.
It is the receiving of the Torah Parsha Yitro.
By the way, I just want to say people.
Yeah.
I know that there's all kinds of different people who listen to this show. And I just want to say,
yeah,
if you're not accustomed to going to synagogue every week, this is the week to go. Go to the synagogue this week. Parsha Yitro, Ten Commandments, you'll feel good about it.
Right. Hear the Ten Commandments, and the custom is in most, you know what? I don't like the word synagogue. I never liked that word. Just in most Jewish houses of prayer, the custom is, you know what? No. In most Jewish Beit Knessets, Batei Knesset, you're supposed to stand when they read the Ten Commandments on the Shabbat, this Shabbat. The Torah portion is replete with blessings for the Jews, including you're going to be a kingdom of priests and a holy nation. And then the Ten Commandments. And you know, Malka, you get the Ten Commandments, you could a little bit fall into haughtiness. God gave you an exodus from Egypt, split the Red Sea from you, brought you to the Sinai Desert, gave you the Torah to this nation, told you that you're a holy nation and a special nation. You could get a tad of haughtiness. So the last verse in the Torah portion of Yitro is one that you might not think should be there. But the last verse says, it's starting to talk about how you build a tabernacle for God. How do you build a mizbeach, a altar for God? And he says, the second to last verse, v'mizbeach avanim taseli, if you're going to build me a altar of stone, i.e. for a temple, lo tivne otehem gazit, don't build them with like hewn stone, Ki charbecha hinaft aleha. Don't swing your sword on it. V'techalela, and you're going to make it. You're going to. What's the opposite of sanctify? I always forget the word. Desecrate, right? Don't desecrate it because I don't know, because it's violent or there's other reasons. But here's the important one for me in this case. V'lo ta'ale b'ma'alot al mizbachi. Don't walk up on steps up to my altar. Asher lo tigale ervatcha alav. So that your nakedness should not be revealed upon it. The halachic implication is the cannot build the stairs up to the altar, but it has to be a ramp. Fine. Because when you walk with stairs, so your nakedness can show through your pants and whatever it is. Okay. That's the legal element. And that is, in fact, if you see all the pictures of the tabernacle and the temple, both altars are with a ramp. But I think in here is hidden a different meaning. And it goes like this, which is, Lo ta'ale b'ma'alot al mizbachi. Don't go up with heights. Like, look at me. I am the chosen people. Look at me. I have received the Torah. Look at me. I'm knowledgeable. Look at me. I'm more knowledgeable than the Gentiles. Look at me. I'm above. Lo ta'ale b'ma'alot al mizbachi. When you go up to my altar, don't you be going up with haughtiness. Why? Because you didn't create this world. I created this world. It's my order. You're here to serve me and to serve the Gentiles by giving them a channel and a blessing of a light of God. You're here to work, buddy. So lo ta'ale b'ma'alot al mizbachi. Don't walk up with haughtiness onto my altar. Asher lo tegaler ervatcha alav. Because if you do walk with haughtiness,
everyone's going to see the truth.
Everybody's going to see your erva, which is your nakedness, which is you're not all that. Yes, you're a holy nation, but because I made you so, because you work for me and you have a role to play in this world. But don't walk around with haughtiness. Don't walk around with haughtiness. And also, Jewish people, you're stubborn and you're not always that smart. Okay, so just walk with humility, and if you get a chance to have an altar and a temple and a tabernacle, do it with humility. Remember your role in this whole thing. Like, yes, you were stood at Sinai. Yes, you received the Torah, but don't think that it was like because because you're the best. It's because I chose you to do it, and you have a job. Just like the priests are people within our peoplehood, etc. We have a role to play for this world, and to have that humility. Lo ta'ale b'ma'alot al mizbachi asher lo tegaleh ervatcha alav. Bezrat Hashem, with the help of God, we shall have that humility. And I want to thank all the listeners and all the friends and all the emails and all the connections. Please connect with me and Malka. If you want the best Twitter, check out Malka's amazing Twitter at Malka Fleischer. And check out our social media, including YouTube and Instagram and what else? Twitter, YouTube, Instagram, Facebook, right? Yep. ye old Facebook, of course, still out there. And I want to bless you wherever you are. And as I said in the video, I have a simple deal for everybody. You send us blessings, we're blessing you right back. That's the deal.
That's right.
I think that's an active deal, Malka. When the world blesses Israel, we got to send them that blessing
back.
Those
who bless you will be blessed.
Right, but I don't mean that in an automatic. That's exactly what I'm saying. Don't think that's an automatic thing. You actively bless us, and we shall actively bless you. That's what we shall do. We will send you. It's not that if you bless us, you'll be blessed. No, 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 no. If you bless us, you will be blessed. That's the deal. We will send you that blessing, and we'll ask God to show his face upon you and shine it into your home, your family, into your life. All right, folks, God bless you. God bless the soldiers of Israel. God protect the soldiers of Israel. God give solace to the families that have lost loved ones and to this nation that hurts. May God help us destroy the forces of Amalek that rise up against us and rise to darken this world. May they be blotted out and their memory be blotted out from underneath the heavens. God bless you wherever you are. Stay tuned, stay strong, stay connected. Shalom.
Shalom.
And Shabbat shalom.